Every time the Blackhawks win this season, you could win big with Circa Sports Illinois. One fan scores a two-night stay at Circa Resort and Casino, and 100 more win a $100 Circa app credit. Don't miss your shot. See the Blackhawks contest page.
Welcome to Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis here in our downtown Chicago studios. Joining me, as always, Jack Heinrich, riding shotgun with me. Jack, what's going on tonight?
Doing good. I'm glad to see we're not injured, like some of the Hawks are, unfortunately, after that road trip to Canada.
You know, like a couple shows ago, we were breaking down playoffs and we were talking about how the Hawks are going to be playing meaningful hockey games, what we expect all season long, essentially through the month of March and hopefully through the month of April, because every time we looked at the NHL standings, the Hawks were either inside the playoff picture in the wild card position, and all the teams behind them, the Hawks had a game up on them, and it wasn't really, there weren't really many sexy teams that you thought were going to threaten Chicago. And so I thought the Hawks were going to be playing meaningful games all season long. But Jack, that was prior to our knowledge of, outside of Spencer Knight, easily the top two players on the Blackhawks team with Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar. And I just don't know how the Blackhawks are going to tread water in the next few weeks without both of them. Like, without Connor Bedard, you knew that the Hawks are going to be without him for a couple weeks, but that was an opportunity for a guy like Frank Nazar to step up in that role and to try to shoulder some of the responsibility. And even that was going to be tough, because the Hawks, we saw in the first game without Connor, the Hawks got shut out 4-0 to Detroit. And then in Toronto, I thought they played a really solid game for 55 minutes until things went sideways. Montreal, the Hawks score just one goal, and it's just, the Hawks are going to be playing games now moving forward where, one, it's going to be really hard to generate offense, but two, it's going to be hard to keep the puck out of your own net when you have a bunch of guys now that are playing a notch or two higher into the lineup, and they're going to be playing significantly more responsibility than they're used to. And so this is going to be tough, but yeah, just to kind of lay out the injury status. Frank Nazar, if you've missed it, he left the game on Saturday in Ottawa after taking a puck to the face. Jeff Blashill said after the game that he's likely going to miss about 4 weeks, which signals to me that it's likely some sort of jaw fracture, which might be a little bit different from the one that Connor Bedard suffered in his rookie year against New Jersey. When Connor Bedard suffered that injury, he took a hit from Brendan Smith, from a big New Jersey Devils defenseman, and Connor was out for 5.5 weeks. I think the original timetable was 6 to 8 weeks, and Connor ends up returning just a little bit earlier than that. And so I think it was a different maybe kind of fracture. With Frank Nazar, we saw last month on November 15th, Boston Bruins defenseman Charlie McAvoy took a slap shot to the face. This was actually from further out, and I went back and watched the replay of that, and my goodness, it looks like it hit almost in the exact same spot as Frank Nazar's puck hit him. Now, with the Frank Nazar injury, he also had, it looked like he had a really big gash, like there was like
something hanging. Yeah.
Yeah, you could almost see like there was skin like flailing out. It was kind of, you know, it was kind of hard to look at, but the way that Frank reacted, he didn't react like it was like a significant jaw. Like he just looked like he was mad that he got hit. And so then when we found out that he was going to be out for 4 weeks, I'm like, oh gosh, like that is just a brutal blow for the Blackhawks. To put a bow on the Charlie McAvoy point. So he took a slap shot to the face on November 15th. What his injury essentially ended up being was a linear jaw fracture. He lost teeth, and then he also had extensive swelling, which he needed to go get a surgical procedure done. He returned to the lineup on December 11th. So essentially almost a full month, just under a full month of action. He's now back in the lineup for the Boston Bruins and has been for the last week and a half, but he's wearing a full face shield. And so I imagine that's going to happen for Frank Nazar when he is ready to return to the lineup, which we were just talking, Jack, offline, potentially could be lining up to return like the same area as Connor Bedard. That would be electric atmosphere at the United Center if they end up returning in the same game. But gosh, this is such a brutal blow for a Blackhawks team that for the first 2 months of the season, they were inside the playoff picture. And now I had to double check this last night because I didn't realize that the Hawks were, they're now sitting dead last in the entire NHL. It's like, man, how did we get here? But then I had to remind myself, Jack, when I was looking at the overall standings for the entire league, there is so much parity in the NHL this season that if the Hawks win like two or three games in a row, they're back to being like a couple points out of a playoff spot. So it's kind of over dramatic to be like, oh, the Hawks are dead last, because there are, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 7 teams that are within 2 points of each other from the bottom of the NHL in the standings. So it is kind of deceiving. It's not like the Hawks are sitting there in last place just all by themselves, but it is just unfortunate because I thought we were going to be talking about a play, just being in the playoff conversation all season long. And now they suffer injuries, not just to Connor Bedard, but to Frank Nazar. Boy, it's going to be really difficult for the Blackhawks to tread water without both of those guys.
It's tough too, because Nathar just scored too to end that goal drought. So you're like, oh, he's getting his mojo back. He's already been hurt, a little banged up this year, and then he goes down. And those are your two offensive drivers, right? I mean, maybe Nick Foligno's coming back, but he's not the 20 goal scorer. He's obviously going to help with his leadership and other things he brings. But right now they need guys that can find the back of the net, and then. You were kind of hoping Nick Lardis could slowly get adjusted, but now he's kind of forced up in there. Like, you're one of our main guys that can score, and he's going to have to go do that. And hopefully he scored last game, so hopefully he can bring that into this game before the little break. But just very unfortunate injury news, and that I think everybody wants to forget that Canadian trip they just had, because it seemed like they're going to get a win, and then everything kind of just fell off the tracks. So like you said, everybody's got to step up now, and hopefully maybe they can, like you're saying, they're like 7 points out of a playoff spot. Like, maybe they could bump it back up, and then those two come back, and maybe it's some competitive hockey. But it might be a little bit of a long month here for the Hawks.
For sure. By the way, I buried the lead again. You mentioned Nick Lardis' name. He is going to be joining our show in the second segment. I did an interview with him after Blackhawks practice today, and we talked about him scoring his first career NHL goal in Ottawa, what it was like going up against Patty Kane, one of his hockey idols, for his first career NHL game. And obviously now without Frank Nazar and Connor Bedard, how much responsibility and motivation that puts on a guy like Nick Lardis to help elevate his game and kind of be a player that the Blackhawks can lean on. So stay tuned for that conversation that we had from earlier today. But yeah, Jack, it's just I was at practice today, and I was driving in. I was thinking, like, what the heck are the lines going to be today? Because I was like, there's no Connor Bedard, there's no Frank Nazar, and even in the game against Ottawa that Nazar left for Chicago, Ryan Green took 26 faceoffs in the game on Saturday. 26. That is a lot for any player, let alone a rookie that wasn't even supposed to be on the opening night roster. He was supposed to start the year in Rockford, was on Rockford's roster to start the year. Landon Slaggart gets hurt in the final preseason finale for the Blackhawks. And so Green gets called up the day before opening day in Florida. And he has not seen Rockford since. And for the majority of this season, too, Ryan Green has been playing on Connor Bedard's line as a winger with Bedard and Andre Burakovsky. So he hasn't really been playing his natural center position. But now it's like, hey, we don't have an option right now. Like, you need to play center, and you're going to be the first line guy in between Tyler Bertuzzi and Andre Burakovsky. Now, those are two stable veterans, so it's not like Ryan has to drive a line, because he can definitely lean on Bertuzzi and Burakovsky. But boy, Ryan Green and Jason Dickinson are essentially going to be taking a ton of faceoffs for the Blackhawks moving forward, because the Hawks literally are running out of center depth options.
Yeah, I think it was a Ryan Donato slotting in at center now too, so everybody's
and he's a natural winger.
Yeah, he's like, getting, yeah. Everybody's getting thrown around here, so this is where, I guess, like, when you're looking at the coach, they sprinkle like the coach development thing. This is what the coaching staff for the Hawks is going to have to do to try to make this work. But That's an, I mean, that's another reason why they signed Donato. He plays all over the lineup. He can play both sides, but him playing center for a while will be interesting to watch. And then, I mean, Ryan Green's really just, he's proven himself to be here, and then now he's getting the first line responsibility. So maybe if you take a longer term look, this could be good for him in the future, but he's getting thrown into it now. We'll see how he responds. But yeah, 26 faceoffs. That's, I mean, when Nazar goes out like that and you're throwing things together, I guess that's what happens.
I mean, we didn't even see Jonathan Toews take 26 yeah. faceoffs here in Chicago. Like, rarely did he see that many faceoffs in a game. And so now you're putting a rookie in there, and the Hawks really don't have a choice. And Ryan Green, like, I think he logged almost 23 minutes of ice time in Ottawa. So he's not just, oh, barely made the team. Now he's scraping like 12, 13 minutes. Like, he is playing significant minutes now. And so he's going to be a guy that I think is going to handle this responsibility well. Like, he is such a very, smart kid. I think that's one of the reasons why he actually worked well with Connor Bedard, because he thinks the game at such a high level that he knows where he has to be. And so I think he's going to handle this pretty well, but it's just a tall order for any player to step in and try to fill the shoes of not just Connor Bedard, but now Frank Nazar. And so we'll see how Ryan Green handles that responsibility. But I think when the Blackhawks, when Connor Bedard suffered the injury, you thought, okay, how are the Blackhawks going to move forward without him for the foreseeable future? And maybe they would have to change a little bit of the way they play, not too much like structurally or whatever, but just based on expectations. Like, the Hawks are probably not going to be scoring 4, 5, 6 goals a game like they were with Connor Bedard. You probably have to win more, you know, 2-1, maybe 3-1 with the empty netter, 3-2, games like that. But now you don't have Connor and Frank Nazar, and it's just going to put a really heavy strain on some of the forwards, and maybe even some members of the back end as well, to jump up and be a little bit more aggressive in pinching in and being offensive minded, as far as you know, like Artem Levchinov and Wyatt Kaiser, trying to channel more of the offensive side of their skill sets. And I'm going to ask this tomorrow to Jeff Blashill in my, you know, one-on-one pregame interview. But like, what is the balance now for Chicago moving forward as a coaching staff, where you continue to hold the players to a high standard, but also giving them a little bit of grace, knowing that their top two skaters essentially are no longer available, and it, like, almost every single player is now playing either out of position or way higher in the lineup than they're used to. So it's going to be, I mean, maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration, because at practice today, Dickinson, Mikheyev were still in the third line role, but subconsciously, they know that they're going to have to try to chip in a little bit more offensively. And so I don't know what the balance is now, because it's going to be hard for me, Jack, to now watch these Blackhawks games. And if the Hawks lose, you know, 4-1 or, you know, 5-2, it's going to be hard for me to be upset, because it's like, well,
bring out the hammer.
Yeah. Like, it's be like, well, I don't know how this team would be able to move forward. Like, if you take out, okay, so Frank Nazar and Connor Bedard, two best Blackhawks, right? If you go to Edmonton and say, well, we're going to take out Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, well, their team is going to take a hit. You go to the Florida Panthers, you take out Matthew Tkachuk and whoever, Sam Reinhart from the lineup, the Florida Panthers were outside of a playoff picture, right, with their two best. Like, you take the two best players off of any one NHL team, they're going to feel the impact of that. And so without Connor Bedard, I was like, okay, the Hawks, if they can just stay around 500, that's probably a win. Mm-hmm. But now without Connor Bedard and Frank Nazar, it feels like even just staying in the 500 range is going to be difficult for them, because it's not like coming out of the Christmas break, the Hawks have Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
well, Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. Don't be putting your feet up too much for those 3 days, because the Hawks got Dallas on the road right out of the gate. So it's just going to be really hard for the Hawks moving forward without Bedard and Nazar. Now, you don't want to rush them back, because like, the Bedard injury seems like one that you certainly want to make sure he's 110% before returning. Nazar bone injury, that's more healable. Like, mm-hmm. you know that he's going to be back and fine. But, man, it's going to be hard for the Hawks to tread water here in the near future.
That's why the Toronto one hurt, I think, because that's the type of game they're going to have to win. Spencer Knight's playing really well. You're up 2-0. It's going to be low scoring and tight. And I mean, the way Spencer Knight's been all year, you know he's good for like a shutout or a one goal every, I don't know, three starts, the way he's been playing this year. And it just seemed like they had control, and then they get one, and then they kind of hold serve, and then eight seconds happens or whatever it is, and they score two goals, and it kind of shocks them. But that's what hurts, I think. I think that kind of was like, whoa, like we were up 2-0, and that was kind of our max goals for that game, and I think they were learning pretty quick. And then the next game, it's like a 4-1, and then the last game of the trip, they score a little bit more. But I agree, it's going to be those low scoring games, and that's why if they win that Toronto one, I think that changes the whole mood for the road trip, and then they don't get it done, and unfortunately that's what happens.
I'm right there with you. If they seal the deal in that Toronto game, they maybe get some momentum from that, and they feel like, all right, we could do this, we could tread water. But then that they lose there, then they score one goal in Montreal, and then you score four goals in Ottawa, but then you give up six, and it's almost like, man, the Hawks are really going to have to try to climb out of this moving forward without Bedard and Nazar. We got more to get to here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, including my conversation with Nick Lardis, coming up next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Very special guest joining me inside the Blackhawks locker room is Blackhawks prospect Nick Lardis, who has made his NHL debut a few games ago, but also is coming off scoring his first career NHL goal. Just your reaction when you saw that puck go in.
Yeah, thank you, by the way. It was pretty crazy. Obviously, doesn't really feel real yet, I guess. But, you know, describe the play a little bit. It was a good forecheck by Dickey and went up the wall. Voss made a great play getting to the net, and I just kind of got there in the slot, made a quick little backhand play, and it was pretty cool.
Is it a little bittersweet that it comes in a loss where it's probably a moment that you've been dreaming about your entire life, and then it happens, and then it comes in a loss, and you're probably trying to snap the winless skid? But how'd you reconcile your feelings after that one?
Yeah, for sure. You're like, you know, I was obviously pretty happy to get that first one out of the way, but, you know, at the same time, it's a team sport. You want to win, and going on a little skid here the past couple of games, like, you know, the team wants to turn it around and start producing more and start winning games. So that's definitely a big focus for sure. But yeah, it was bittersweet, I guess, a little bit, just to, you know, score that first one, but obviously lose the game. But it was super nice. All the guys were kind of coming up to me after the game and congratulating me too. So that was pretty cool.
Take me back to your call-up. Everyone has like their call-up story, but you had an interesting one where the bus had to turn around over in Rockford. What was that experience like, and then having to play the very next game without a morning skate?
Yeah, it was pretty crazy. Obviously, we just played at home in Rockford against Milwaukee, and we played the next day in Grand Rapids. So kind of packed everything up, and we were about 15 minutes out from Rockford, driving to GR, and kind of got the call there from the GM in Rockford, Mark Bernard. And it was pretty cool feeling. Told me they're gonna turn the buses around, so... some of the guys were kind of cheering me about it just as kind of a joke. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, it was a quick turnaround for sure. Kind of called the Blackhawks, told me what the situation was going to be for the next day, and kind of drove down that night, got in pretty late at the hotel, and just tried to dial in for the next day.
Did you drive in by yourself? Like, were you in your own thoughts the entire way? And what was that drive, and what were you thinking about on that drive?
Yeah, it was about like 12, 1 a.m., driving in. I never thought my first NHL game would be me the night before at 1 a.m. driving on the highway to Chicago. That's for sure. I thought it'd be a little more dialed in, I guess. But, I mean, that's what the situation called for. And it was pretty crazy. Just called my parents on the phone, and they were pretty much half asleep when I kind of called them. But just discussing the plan for how they're going to get to the game the next day. And it's definitely a moment I'll never forget, for sure.
What was that game like? I think that was one of the largest crowds in the last 2 years at the United Center, with Centennial Celebration Night. Patty Kane was in town. I know he was one of your favorite players growing up. What was just that experience like in that first game?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, sold out at the United Center. Can't really ask for a better first NHL debut game for myself. And, you know, even to play against, you know, an original six team and play against, you know, DeBrincat, Patty Kane, all those top guys, it was pretty cool. So yeah, definitely a first couple cool game to start off my career for sure.
What was your first anthem experience like? I think that was one of the louder ones of the season with Wayne Mesmer up there and Frank Pelico. Just your thoughts on that.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, I remember a couple years ago, I played here in a preseason game and kind of heard it for the first time. And it wasn't sold out, but it was still buzzing in there. And it was a really cool moment. And then kind of to see it again live on the bench in a real NHL game and just have the United Center sold out, it was an unbelievable moment, feeling. I don't really know how to describe it. Kind of blacked out at that time. So, yeah.
Your NHL journey, you've gone to the OHL, AHL, to the NHL in really less than a year and a half span. What's been the challenges of going from from OHL to AHL, and then the biggest transition from the minors to the NHL?
I think just adjusting, like getting used to the systems, getting used to the league, how players play, whether it's your line mates or the other team, just adjusting to that next step. I feel like I've always done a good job of adjusting. You know, it takes obviously a couple games for players to kind of adjust and find their game in a league, but I think I did a good job that at the junior level and even the AHL level, and you know, hopefully going to do it here at the NHL level. So excited for it. Just want to learn a lot and just soak in as much information as I can when I'm up here right now, and just keep getting better every day.
All right, last one for you. No Connor Bedard, no Frank Nazar. Do you kind of use that as motivation to be like, okay, I know this maybe wasn't a role that I was expecting to play where they need to lean on me, but do you take that as a challenge as a player?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think one of my strengths are putting the puck in the back of the net, finding quiet spaces on the ice to, you know, create scoring chances and get shots off on net. And obviously with those two high caliber players out, it opens doors up for other guys on the team to kind of fill those roles a little more. And it's motivating for me, not just me, but everyone on the team, to kind of take their game to that next level. And that's what, you know, myself, I'm trying to do here at this level. Obviously, it takes a little bit of time. You can't really just jump into it right away as a new player, but it's motivating for sure.
Awesome. Thanks for doing this, and congrats on that first goal again.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
All right, that was Blackhawks forward Nick Lardis. Thank you so much to him to do that after practice. I know the Blackhawks had their company holiday party right after at the United Center. And how about that story, the call-up story of the Rockford Ice Hogs driving to Grand Rapids? They're like 10, 15 minutes out. They get word that Lardis is getting a call-up. They have to turn the bus around. And then Lardis essentially has to drive to downtown Chicago at 1 a.m, just in your own thoughts, like just open highway. And I don't know what I would have thought. I actually thought that Saturday game, his first career NHL game against Detroit, was the best game that he's played of the four so far. But now without Connor Bedard and without Frank Nazar, Nick Lardis, he was on a line on Saturday against Ottawa. He was on the fourth line. Not a role that he's obviously suited to play, but when we got to practice today, he's skating on the second line with Oliver Moore, Ryan Donato, and then you have Lardis on the right wing, and he's on one of the two power play units. I couldn't tell if he was on the first or second unit because he was being a placeholder for Teuvo Teravainen as well, and I couldn't tell if they're going to have Lardis on the first or second. But anyway, Lardis is going to be, this is going to be a great opportunity for Nick to showcase his talents. He scored 71 goals in the OHL last year, which is the eighth player, I think, in OHL history to do that. And now, kind of piggybacking from his season last year, he's got off to a sensational start with the Rockford Ice Hogs. And so now let's see, every level he's been graduating, he's been producing at a consistent level. And it usually takes him a few games to kind of get going. And so I'm wondering now, with the four games under his belt, Hawks back at the United Center, he's back inside a top six role. I wonder what he's going to do with this role. Like, I feel like he's really going to try to take it upon himself to channel that goal scoring touch that he has down in Rockford and at every other level. And so I'm curious to see how he's going to handle this larger responsibility moving forward without 98 number 91.
Yeah, I think this is like the one, I guess you could say, positive with him, is he's going to play in the top six. There's no one that's really going to move him out of there. And hopefully he can get a bunch of time on the ice and just figure it out. I liked in your interview always, you're like, what can you do to help? And he's like, well, I'm good at putting it in the back of the net. And he kind of laughed. But you like that confidence from someone like that. And he's a goal scorer. And you want that first goal, which was a pretty nice goal for his first goal, to hopefully keep building on that and being able to hopefully be like one of the guys they can rely on to put the to score, because that's what they're going to need.
100%. And I do like the fact that he is going to be playing on a line with Nick Lardis, Ryan Donato. I know the more green Lardis line didn't really work over the last few games, because I just think it's too much youth on that roster or on that line. And so I think now with Donato going up there to kind of go to the dirty areas, now more and Lardis can kind of set themselves up. I would like to see Teravainen play with Lardis at some point. I think that's a combination that would really work well. Teravainen is a really, really good playmaker, pass first guy, veteran, very responsible two way defensively. He's on the penalty kill. And I think setting up Lardis on the right side would kind of both, I think both of those guys would benefit from playing from each other, where Lardis is a straight shooter and he can really put the puck in the net. And I think it would help free up Teravainen too, to just do what he does best, versus Teravainen needing to become a player that he's not really accustomed to playing, is more being like a, because he's more pass first, you don't want Teravainen to think, okay, I gotta be now a shooter. Well, then it's right. Like, you don't want him to take, I mean, you do want Teravainen to shoot the puck more, because I think he can be too pass first. But I think if you paired him with a guy like Nick Lardis, I think not only will Lardis benefit from Teravainen, but I think Teravainen would benefit from Lardis. And so I wonder if we see that potential combination at some point down the road too.
Yeah, that makes sense, playing to their strengths. And I mean, everybody talks about how smart of a player he is. That can only help a young player. And well, he had maintenance day today, right? He's not hurt.
Correct. He had a maintenance. I can't tell. Poor Teravainen's been dealing with a lot. I mean, he took that. He took that puck to the mouth. Can't remember which game it was. I think the Hawks were on the road, Vancouver. I think it was maybe. I think they're on the. Anyway, he takes a puck to the mouth, and then he took a block shot in Ottawa where he left a little bit. Then he came back, and maybe it was one of those things where you block a shot off your foot and you know that that thing is going to swell up like the second the adrenaline wears down. So maybe he's dealing with the effects of that. And so, yes, he took a maintenance day at practice today, but he's going to be playing tomorrow is the plan.
Good. We can't lose anybody else.
Well, think about it. I mean, realistically, who would be the third best player on this Blackhawks roster? Like, you could make a case that it's Teravainen, like based on his responsibilities. Like, obviously Tyler Bertuzzi is, you know, really valuable on the power play and on that first line, being like going to the net front area. But Teravainen's a guy that you have on your power play and your first penalty kill unit. And obviously he eats those tough matchups at even strength as well. And so, like, I can't think of three more important players on the Hawks in the forward department than, you know, Bedard, Nazar, and Teravainen. So yes, they can't afford to lose him. And the positive news is that Nick Foligno was also cleared again to practice today. He ended up practicing in Ottawa on Friday. Wasn't good enough to play on Saturday against the Senators, where he was drafted. But I wonder if maybe he could be good to go for tomorrow, and that would maybe psychologically give the Blackhawks a boost moving forward, not just on the ice, but off of the ice as well. I think the Hawks have really missed the presence of their captain. And so we'll see what Foligno's status will be. But, thanks again to Nick Lardis for joining us, on that Blackhawks Live interview. We have one more break to get to, and then we are going to wrap up Blackhawks Live presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, next on 720 WGN. Back here on Blackhawks Live presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be. Charlie Romeliotis and Jack Heinrich putting a bow on this show. Our last one before the little holiday, the 3-day holiday break in the NHL. Something the NHL does that I really appreciate is they institute a holiday freeze so that no teams can make trades over the holidays. So it kicks in December 19th and it runs, I believe, through December 27th is when it gets reactivated. So I know that the holidays can maybe be a little bit of a stressful time for an athlete if you're maybe in some trade discussions, but the NHL has instituted that a while ago. And so something that I like, but right out of the holiday break is one of my favorite tournaments of the year, and it's the World Juniors, which is always a popular tournament. It's basically the under 20 prospects, and the Blackhawks have three of them set to represent their countries. Anton Frundell, who was the number 3 overall pick in this past year's draft for the Blackhawks, he will be representing Team Sweden. Vaclav Nestrosil, who is also a first-round pick in that same draft class, is representing Czechia. And then you have AJ Spellacy, who will be representing Team USA. That's a guy. I think Anton Frundell is really the notable name. I'm very much looking forward to seeing how Frundell handles playing against his peers. I know he's been playing most of essentially the entire year in the Swedish Hockey League, which is the highest tier league over in Sweden. That's a lot to ask, and his ice time has fluctuated a little bit because over in the Swedish league, it's more about the ice time is prioritized from the veterans down. And so with the World Juniors, it's kind of essentially, it's different. It's like, all right, who are our best players? And I saw that earlier today, Team Sweden named Anton Frundell as one of their four, I think, alternate captains. And so he's going to be wearing a leadership role, which tells me that he also is going to be playing a big role on the ice. And so looking forward to seeing what Frundell can do there. And then obviously Nestrosil, he's been having a terrific year over in college, maybe a little bit exceeding expectations over there. So let's see how he does in a tournament like this where he's playing against some of the best players at his age. And then the one guy I am really interested to see how he does in a tournament like this is AJ Spellacy for Team USA. Now, Spellacy is, I mean, he really is like a physical specimen for his age. He's like he's 6'2". He might be already be 220, like I, or 210, like he's already 200 plus pounds. And I watched him at the Minnesota Rookie Showcase tournament at the beginning of this season, and he was just an absolute wrecking ball. And I think his game probably doesn't translate well over in juniors, where he's just very clearly bigger and stronger than most of those players over there. But to play in a tournament like the World Juniors, where the stakes are elevated in every single game, I'm curious to see how he's going to perform. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if we left that tournament for Team USA and you're thinking, my goodness, AJ Spellacy made a really good impression for the Blackhawks and just in that tournament itself, because like he's not going to play in that tournament timid. It's going to be tight checking. It's probably going to be an atmosphere that he really thrives in. And so that's a guy that I'm circling to see how he handles the tight knit or the tight checking, tournament that the World Juniors can be. And so, yeah. So those are the three Blackhawks to highlight. I believe that tournament is starting on Friday. So, later on in this week, right as after we get out of this holiday break. So, looking forward to that. And seeing if Team USA can pull off a gold medal, which would be really nice. That's going to do it for Blackhawks Live, presented by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting, the way it should be. Our next show is going to be Monday, December 29th at 7 p.m. Hope you all have a very Merry Christmas and a happy holiday. And we'll talk to you right before the new year. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.